And we're back, just like I promised. Phil Conlon is here, and I said, listen, Phil Conlon is a veteran trade unionist, been to many of the conventions.
I have.
And you said something off air, and I want to make sure you said it.
I just want to say just how angry these shenanigans should make people who belong to unions.
These alleged shenanigans.
I'm sorry. We want to have due process here. These alleged shenanigans. So many people in Canada trust their unions and rely on their unions to do things for them. They pay their dues, right? And union members want to know that their unions are out there fighting for them, not that they're doing this kind of nonsense. And the thing is, Unifor is just one union, and it's an outlier at that because it thinks it's better than the other unions, frankly. But it reflects on all unions when this nonsense goes on.
Absolutely.
And right now, we're in a time when so many workers in so many industries are turning to unions and say, can we join your movement because we need help? You know, I mean,
And the answer comes, movement.
Yeah.
Well, pardon me, pal. Who you been talking to? Go ahead.
That's exactly right. And it's because the stuff that gets publicity. One of the things, of course, is watching this this business with this guy who was the big shot at Starbucks, who was always like a really slick Bill Clinton liberal, you know, and who now says that unions are the biggest conspiracy against the democratic way of life that ever existed. And poor him, you know, why are his associates joining this outside organization? I mean, you know, when you're having those kind of nonsensical attacks and people respond, say, where can I sign? Where can I sign? And then you have a little diversion like this nonsense. It's really maddening. And
well, he mentioned the UAW.
Yeah.
Those guys. You heard about double dipping? There's also drowning in the stuff.
Absolutely. And it's awful. It's disgraceful. And I hope the members at Unifor handle it.
On that point, a class issue. Some people regard unionism as the highest level of class consciousness. It's far from it. Very far from it. Because ultimately, you are supposed to be fighting in the general interest of all working people. That's why you form a union, which is a tiny piece of the all those people who are identified as wage earners, wage laborers, people who we can go to the fine points, sell their labor power. You can go through the whole language, but you're talking about a class, an entire class of people, and you say, "Well, you should join a union." And they say, are you kidding? Did you read the Toronto Star today?
Yeah.
Did you see the Globe?
And
you want me to join, right?
Yeah.
And I did. I talked to that organizer, and that bum is making three times as much as making. Ten times as much.
All those things get said, and
that's
so
very
unfortunate.
All these guys, they should look at how much they make, by the way, because that is one of the reasons we got this problem, is that a class of people have developed, and they have become encrusted on top of the working class, and they actually see them, they call themselves the vanguard, except they ain't doing nothing. And Unifor was going to go out and organize everybody. It didn't happen. They started raiding people. Yeah. That's not even an allegation. They just raided. They were told by the Canadian Labor Congress, first they could do it because one of their pals was running the place. Then, because he almost got trampled to death in his own office, he said, no, you can't do that. But, you know, you're right. So people say, well, no, you want me to join. But, you know, so listen, people risk their lives when they join unions. They risk their livelihoods because you say, well, help us organize. You know that in almost every industry, if you're the guy who organized the people in your shop, you'll never work in that shop again because when they sign the contract, they say, okay, we're going to give you that, but that guy is not going to work here. And the union agrees. And they kick him upstairs or kick him somewhere else, and he's gone. And a lot of people have to be the ones who go stand there to get the union, lose their jobs in the process. No, we need more, I would call it, class consciousness. And they should have transparency, and as Tony Lee alluded to, you know, one person, one vote. And hear more, see more, participate. When they're not participating, so many big unions, you go to the meeting, there's eight people sitting in chairs, and their friend is running the meeting.
I always tell people the first time I joined a railway union back in the 70s, I found out that the monthly meeting was a monthly triple meeting. The first meeting in the bar, invitation only. I wasn't invited. The second meeting was the business meeting, official. Records were kept over in 20 minutes. I was there. Third meeting was in the bar. I wasn't invited. That's just how it was done.
Well, at least you didn't become an alcoholic. You should be appreciative. They didn't let you come in there and drink.
Hey, Phil, tell us something about some war stuff, because I think you had some quotes from Mr.
Phil Conlon is not only aware of issues, he's aware of the time.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to mention that, and I say it again, and this is our, you know, this is a summer season, so we try to read books, keep track. And I've already said on the show, I was reading Robert Graves' Goodbye to All Debt. Go out and get a copy, and it's an autobiography. He wrote it in the mid-20s. Focus of the point for me is that he is a walking, talking, real participant in a hideous war in which he got horrible wounds and in which he saw friends die and he had relatives die and he was fortunate to survive. And instead of saying, golly, what a great country we've got, he said, goodbye to that. And he wants people to know what the experience was. I mean, I'll just tell you an anecdote. Ian Blunden, you may know the name, he's literary giant in some quarters, was a friend of Graves, and he, at the end of the war, he and Graves were talking and about what their experience had been, and he said, Blunden's the name, pardon me, he said, I will never, ever pick up a gun again. I will never participate in another war after what we saw, the stupidity of the officers, the arrogance and idiocy of our political leaders who wouldn't find a way to resolve it, et cetera. The kind of thing you would expect from a wounded veteran. But then he said, but I'll tell you, Robert, if there's going to be war with the French, I'll be there in an instant. Now, this is an English army officer talking about the French army officer, or French army. And he said he would only fight if he got a chance to fight the French, who were his allies. And part of what you learn there is, in Graves, is he said that if there was a problem on the right flank, it was Jock. All the Jocks, that would be Scotsmen. They all ran. And then on the left flank, if there was a problem, that was the French. The French didn't show up. We had this big offensive, and then they didn't show up. That's the way they talk. And they created, some of the underlying things that Graves said, and we really ought to think about it, particularly in terms of violence in America today. People, it's July 4th, so, of course, Americans are shooting each other in various cities, mass shootings. It's another day in the neighborhood, as the guy said. Graves said he learned two things in the Army that he hadn't known previously. One was lying. He said that he really learned to lie a lot. And the other was to curse. He said swearing and lying were the two main things that he picked up, that he brought home with him. And he said actually there was a period after the war when he would just take things because he learned to do that in the Army. And I can tell you from being in the Marine Corps, and many stories about boy, it would be great if we had something. And then that night, somebody walks in and says, well, we have it now. And nobody says, hey, you shouldn't have stolen that. But to come to a bigger story, Graves said that he was, at the end of the war, he wanted out. But as happens, they're not so quick to let you go. They say, well, we still have other things. And people start struggling to get out because the war is over. But he was sent to Limerick. And Phil, you know about Limerick.
Of course.
And he said, gee, something interesting was starting to happen in Ireland. He said he asked, by the way, to not be assigned there, to be given any command position, because he says, I'm Irish, and I have a conflict. You can't ask me to shoot at Irishmen. But they did ask him to shoot at Irishmen, and he said he did shoot him. He fought them. Now, meanwhile, another place he was briefly in right at the end of the war, was in command. I think it was 1918 or 1919, probably 1919. He was in charge of a number of Canadians at a place called Rhyl, R-H-Y-L, near Liverpool. You've probably been there, right, Phil? I don't know.
I haven't. But
we have Welsh friends who would tell me. But it's pronounced Rhyl. That part I was instructed on how to say it. Well, at Rhyl, the Canadians staged a mutiny. And I have to tell listeners, Taylor Poore, I apologize. I have not looked into how many people, how many soldiers were killed. But according to Graves, and he wasn't specific, but he said there were a number of people, soldiers shot. I don't know who shot who. It was, he said, a mutiny, a serious mutiny at an army camp, Canadian army camp in Rhyl. This is Robert Graves' testimony. And he said that they were, it was organized by the Canadians, and that they had a signal to begin the mutiny. And the signal was, "Come on, you Bolsheviks." Have you heard about the Canadian mutiny in Rhyl, Phil?
No.
Yes or no? Okay.
No.
His best test.
I've read some Canadian history, but they didn't mention it.
I didn't know it. No. I have to read Robert Graves, a book written in the 20s. Yeah. You know, could somebody investigate this? I appreciate any notes. I know that their listeners are brighter than you and I, so they please fill in the
Well, something else the listeners could tell us about, because I had an argument with somebody recently who told me I had to be making it up. But I believe that Canada actually sent troops into Russia in 1918 or 19 or 20 or something.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, boy.
To join the White Army to try to overthrow the Bolsheviks.
That's right. Well, does anybody out there among our listeners know the history of that? Because nobody talks about that. Oh, you know?
It should be talked about, of course, by the way. I mean, that's one of the great shames is that they tried to restore the Tsar. And the Canadians and the, by the way, there's a lot of people there, the British and Americans. The Americans lost a lot of people. I mean, they were fighting in terrible weather. And my guess is that through the ranks, a lot of people were saying, "Go Bolsheviks." I tell you, another thing that I learned from Robert Graves is he said, he in saying goodbye to all that, he was trying to recover from basically what we used to call shell shock. So he went bicycle riding and he called on his old friend, Thomas Hardy, probably the greatest, one of the greatest writers of the modern times, the English language. And he said, Hardy said, "Tell me, Robert, should I believe the British press when they talk about the Bolsheviks?" He said, "I read such terrible things about them." And Graves said, "No, you ought not to." Well, the reason that we're talking like this on the Taylor Report is because whenever you have wars, Robert Graves tells us, as does anybody conscientious, you can't go by the front page of your paper, because the front page of your paper is there to enlist you in the support of one side or the other. You're not actually getting news. You're getting prompted. You cannot think. If people want you to become enraged, there's a proverb, rage furnishes no weapon. You can think. You cannot think. If you are inflamed, and the headlines are designed to inflame you. So, guess what? Lee Morgan is coming, and the Taylor Report is closing out. Thanks to Shay and to Phil, and we'll see you next week.